C1SP. Number 10A.
Now, before I take the second part on spiritualism, I want to make a few remarks on the work we are doing. Next time, I want to finish the third part of spiritualism and therefore finish the whole chapter on spiritualism. And that would bring us to the end of the session which we had in view. But from experience which I have made in Switzerland, I feel that it is right and good to take also the chapter Animal Magnetism unmasked, because I feel that if that chapter is left out, that animal magnetism has too many chances to try to destroy the work we have been endeavoring to do during this session. So you got a little sticker, is that right? Which you can put on the admission card, on the back of the admission card, which gives you the indication of two more sessions. What I want to do is to take the whole chapter on animal magnetism on the session of the 4th and 5th October. And then I want to have an additional session on the 29th and 30th of November, which I regard as not compulsory, at which I want to sum up all the five chapters we were considering. I always felt, whenever I was doing a series of talks in Zurich or here, that I always finish at the last talk with the last subject of what I was saying, and that is not so good, really, because one should always have plenty of time to recapitulate what one has done and to sum up the whole picture, and it seems that always helps a lot to give the right view and to see everything in its right proportion. So I intend to have that session on the 29th and 30th of November for anybody who likes to attend, and I think what I will do is to have the Saturday and Sunday as one unit. See, not as today, as up to now, that I recapitulate on the Saturday, but if you can make yourself free for both days, because I think I will need both days to go through what we have been doing. And then I think I will stop with these talks. Now, well, that gives many students a chance to take some breath and to pick up some one or the other point, because I'm sure that one or the other student felt a lack in this or that respect, that perhaps the one likes to recapitulate the fundamentals and others like to go back to the earlier chapters and so on. Some like to go back to the Bible. And, I just feel it in my bones that it is right to stop. If it is forever, I don't know yet, but at least I want to stop for at least a year. Now, we come to the second part of spiritualism. And this second part on spiritualism is succeeding logically what we have been considering in the first part. In the first part, we tried to see how the standpoint of the science of spirit analyzes its own realm by showing that if mind has identity, then only that which comes out, proceeds from this divine mind, only that which is ideational is really real, and only that which proceeds and can be deduced from spirit is really real, Only that which comes from soul is really real, and that from principle and life and truth and love, that which is it can be deduced from that standpoint is really real, that only that are the true identities of being, and that everything which does not proceed from the divine principle God, that therefore everything which proceeds from the human, from, as she says, you, from the you, and the definition she gives of the you in the glossary is finity. Say finity, yes, is finity. That everything which does not proceed from a revealed deduction, from a divine logic of the definition of God, has its origin outside of this divine principle, and therefore everything which proceeds from such a so-called source is not real, cannot have reality, and therefore are not identities of being. They are not real things. But we have seen that that those things can be conscious to mortal mind, that mortal mind evolves them just as in dreams, that they are tangible to mortal mind, and so that from the mortal mind's point of view, they seem to be real. And this leads us right to the second part, where spiritualism comes in and says, you say in the science of spirit that only the things of spirit are real, and that the phenomena of spiritualism are not real. But the spiritist says, but I can always witness the phenomena of spiritualism. In other words, the spiritualist says, but spiritualism works. But spiritualism does work. That the things spiritualism says have phenomena, and they can show these phenomena. They are not just hallucination, they are not just tricks. I think so often we are apt to classify the phenomena of spiritualism just as tricks in dark seances, but that happens very often. But besides that, a lot of these phenomena are true, are real to the mortal sense of you. So the second part must take up the question, well then, how can we explain these phenomena? How can we see what these phenomena are? And then comes the big question, are these phenomena real, or do they only seem to be real? So the second part has an overtone of uncovering what is real and what is unreal in regard to the phenomena of spiritualism. Now, we already had in the introductory paragraph yesterday an indication of what the second part will show us. There we had that it says, but the revelations of Christian science unlock the treasures of truth. We'll see in the second part again both standpoints, how on the one side Christian science shows the method how to unlock the treasures of truth, how to find out what is true in a situation. When a situation presents itself as a material phenomena, no matter if it's table tipping or if it's sickness or pain or fever. That doesn't matter. It's always the same. If a physical phenomena presents itself, then we must ask ourselves, what is the truth about that situation? And Christian Science will have another method to tackle this question than does spiritualism. Christian Science will lead such a phenomena back to quite a different origin and a given different explanation of the same phenomena as spiritualism will do. So we will be concerned here with a very interesting question, namely to see behind the physical phenomena into the mental realm. And when we are in the mental realm, then really the work starts of separating and of being able to discern in that mental realm the origin of that mentality. So, whereas on one side we will see that a knowledge, a true knowledge of the signs of being will unlock that treasure of truth, that realm of truth, that vast consciousness of the mental realm, that on the other side we find an explanation for all the physical phenomena by tracing it back in spiritualism to a mortal belief and not to an immortal spirit. See, in that point really lies now the big decision. Mrs. Eddy, I think, sums up in miscellaneous writings the whole second part very nicely. It gives a very good key to this second part. She says, all that are called communications from spirits lie within the realm of mortal thought. They all lie within the realm of mortal thought on this plane of existence and are the antipodes of Christian Science. Now, this will, if one begins to understand this statement, one has a very good key to this second part, where one begins to realize that all the phenomena of spiritualism, which, as we saw yesterday, include in a vaster realm all the phenomena of mentalism, of whatever that system of mentalism will be, if it's yogism or anything of that kind, that it always lies, what she says, within the realm of mortal thought. And it is always within that realm on this plane of existence. You see, it has two points which we have to keep in mind. First, that everything that goes on in our human experience, which is not of a divine nature, which is not of a harmonious nature, that everything that goes on with on the plane of pain and sickness and fever and depression and dying and so on, is something that goes on within the realm of mortal thought. Spiritualism says, no, that goes on in the realm of the spirits, and that spirits communicate to us. That the origin of these phenomena are not within us, within mortal thought, but that they are somewhere without. And so spiritualists always go and ask for an outside aid. So always, spiritualism always relies on an outside aid. That's why it's so pernicious, because it deprives us of our own work, of our own spiritual development. It always tries to have an outside aid and tries to find this aid on the other plane of existence, with spirits. Whereas we must see, there doesn't exist such a thing as a here and a hereafter, such a thing as a universe here and a universe hereafter. That distinction is the distinction which mortals' belief makes. We make that belief, you know. Just as Mrs. Eddy always says that we, if somebody dies, that it is we, in our belief, that we give that death sentence. That we say he is dead. But the departed doesn't say that. The departed doesn't say that because he never can be dead. Because such a thing as death is a human invention. It isn't a divine fact. Such a thing as death is an invention and a terminology and a belief which is within the range of mortal belief of this on this plane of existence. We have called a happening like the passing on death and have invested it with all sorts of beliefs. In one culture they invest it with this and that sort of belief, in another religion or in another culture or in another age they invest it with another belief. It already shows that it is just a belief dependent on the belief of those who are here. So, I think if we see these two points, which she here may, perhaps you look up once this passage, it is in Miscellaneous Writings 34:23, that perhaps this gives you always a clue to that whole second part and to the whole hullabaloon of mortal existence. Because it shows, really, that the first part gives us a pure logical analysis which shows that only that is real and is untouched by anything, that which is deduced and governed and maintained and created by the divine mind. And that everything which is not created by the divine mind is a human belief, which in the course of thousands and millions and billions of years forms various new concepts, takes on old traditional concepts which has become conviction, and not only beliefs, but innate conviction, instincts, and so on. But they all originated in a belief, in something outside of the divine mind. And so the second part, which deals with all the phenomena of spiritualism, which deals with all the phenomena of mortal belief, must be recognized as mortal beliefs. And not because they are not known to the conscious mortal mind, because they are in that vast realm of the unconscious or subconscious mortal mind, because they are there and we don't know them, we call them mysterious or wonderful, and then we attribute it falsely to a spirit or to God. That's where the mistake comes in. That's what we will be seeing today. It's quite interesting also to see what Mrs. Eddy writes of herself in Miscellaneous Writings on page 95, when some people, knowing her life and seeing what she has been doing in her life, have seen some of the unusual phenomena, some wonders, some healings, and so on, that naturally they attributed that to spiritualism. And so she defended herself. She says, "Am I a spiritualist?" And gave her answer, "I am not. There have always attended my life phenomena of an uncommon order, which spiritualists have miscalled mediumship." See, the moment we don't understand something extraordinary, we always put it somewhere into mysticism, and afterwards into a sign that it is a sign of God's hand. But that's human belief that does that. And human belief can't make something true which is not true. So she says, they miscalled it mediumship. But I clearly understand that no human agencies were employed, that the divine mind reveals itself to humanity through spiritual law. So you see, we come to a very important point, which especially with she deals with in the seventh subject of the second part, namely that outwardly a phenomena, an extraordinary phenomena, she takes their eloquence, that a phenomena can be misconstrued, and it can be claimed to be a phenomena of spiritualism, and on the other side, it can be claimed to be a phenomena of Christian Science. Just as here she says, well, there have always attended my life phenomena of uncommon order. These phenomena were visible and recognizable by the people. And the question is, what are we doing with them? If we don't understand them, we easily can construe them as phenomena of spiritualism. We can construe them as phenomena of spirits. In fact, they were something very different. In fact, she said, they were what the divine mind has revealed through spiritual law. So we see that the phenomena by itself doesn't teach us very much. It doesn't show us much about its reality. A phenomena may be wonderful, may be monstrous, may be supernatural, and then we can misconstrue it. The one can say, well, that's the effect of spirits, of God. The other can say, well, that's the effect of a pure, divine, spiritual revelation. And so, the second part has as its office to give us a key how we can always recognize if a phenomena has a divine origin or a mortal origin. So, the second part is not so much a question as the first part, which tries to analyze what are the true identities of being and what are the false identities of being. The second part has as its office to take all the phenomena of the mind and mind with a small m, and analyze them, how much they are the product of the divine mind, or in which respect they are the product of mortal mind. That's the uncovering of a situation. The big question which the future decades will have to decide on is really the question, is the mental spiritual? Is the mental spiritual? See, if unusual phenomena can either by spiritualists be claimed to be the phenomena of spirits, which are mental, or if they can be claimed to be the revelations of the divine mind, which again is mental, then we have to be aware that therefore there must be made a clear distinction between mentality and mentality. That not every mentality is spiritual, that the mental realm is not synonymous with the spiritual realm, that the mental can be the mortally mental, or that it can be the divinely mental. Now, this is a question which is now being touched by some psychologists, and especially by some psychosomatic medical people. First, there was always, especially in psychosomatic and in psychology, one began to realize that physical phenomena were only an effect and not the cause, that the effect were in the mental, that a mental cause could produce a physical phenomena, just as in spiritualism. But then, for a long time, psychologists and psychosomatic medicine halted at that point, until lately they begin to ask themselves the question, but what is the mental? Is there not something superior that governs the mental? And so little by little they come to that, I would say, to that hierarchy, as one professor calls it, the hierarchy of such a procedure, namely that he said that the body, the physical, is ruled first by the mental. The mental is above that. But then he said, but that mental can be of a very different nature, and so felt that above that is another stage or another stratum, namely the spiritual. That it is a big question if it is the spiritual that is governing the mental, and then the mental the body, or if it is just human belief, animal instincts, and all these things which have not their origin in religion, in God, which govern the whole mentality, the whole mortal consciousness of a man, and through that mortal consciousness governs the body. So little by little, you see, all over the world, the propositions which in this second part are explained come now into into the worldwide discussion. Is the mental always spiritual or not? Now, Christian Science in this second part says all is spirit, and therefore only that which is spirit is mind, is real mind. And so only that mind which is spiritual, only that mind which is in line with spirit is real mind, and therefore has always a true effect.